Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Comedian's Tea Party. And this week I have got Luke Branch on big old episode 30. So Luke, if you don't know who he is the singer-songwriter from the band Asylums, formerly of Smother and other bands, all worth checking out. Asylums have just released their third album, which is absolutely incredible. There's going to be details about where you can see that on the podcast description and at the end. So check out that. He also founded and runs Cool Thing Records, the record label that he's released his own albums on and albums for loads of other people. Real sort of lo-fi organization. It's incredible. It's really cool. Just go and check out all the stuff that he does. He's just a brilliant guy. He's a really lovely guy. I've known him for like 18 years thereabouts, maybe more. I don't think it's less. You join us in the chat right when I'm sorting out some sound issues, but I'll leave a little bit of that in because it's just some of the stuff he comes out with sometimes. I feel like it just paints like a slightly different side of it that you only really get to see when you sort of spend a lot of time with him. So I've left that in because I think it's funny. He's just a really intelligent guy. He's a really lovely guy. He works harder than anybody I know. Like, he's constantly, every time I see him, he's just completely wired because he's just working so hard on like another project. Really considerate of a lot of things, and I think that shows in a lot of this conversation. It's really, I absolutely love this chat. It's genuinely one of my favourites that I've had so far, and I think a lot of sort of really just fun stories and fun bits of conversation come out of it, and some really interesting things as well. So yeah, you're going to enjoy it. There's a bit at the end as well. I'm well prepared to wrap the entire chat up, and then I end up asking him about something else, and I'm glad I did, because it led to some very, very interesting conversation and some more fun stories. I should point out, by the way, I'm speaking reasonably quietly here because my fiance is currently asleep in the bedroom above the living room where I currently am, so hopefully I don't wake her up. There's some weird sounds during a podcast, you'll hear that. That is an abundance of fireworks going off outside. No idea why. It's just loads and loads of fireworks. It's been going on for weeks around here. Not sure why, but there you go. People just love fireworks. I end up getting a new T-emergency question out of the conversation, which I think you're going to enjoy. Also, an odd revelation following one of the other T-emergency questions about drinking hot drinks in hot weather. That's worth listening to. And dunking a biscuit. Weird result to that. So, yeah, he's so odd. Oh, also, the episode with Josh, I forgot to do the intro until about halfway through. This time around, I forgot to do it until the very end. Anyway, I don't want to hold you up any further because it's a brilliant chat. It's genuinely one of my favourites that I've had so far. So I'll see you at the end with social links and all of that sort of thing. Enjoy the episode.
Words.
1 2 1 2 1 2 1 2 1 2 1 2.
Hello,
1 2.
I've solved it.
Lovely, fucking lovely.
Oh, I don't know how that happened, but we are all good, I believe. I think we're up and running. Could you cool. say some more words?
I got a cap in my ass, being hoist on the mast. What's the show, Crow?
Sure, we're in. We're all good, and you can hear me, all right? Yeah.
Yes, mate. Sometimes I look down when I'm talking because I can't stand the sight of myself.
No, fair enough. Yeah, I get it. I look down for the same reason because I also occasionally can't stand the sight of you.
Very, very understandable.
Right, we're in. How are you?
I am adequate.
Cool. I've been recording this whole thing, by the way. Some of that will stay in. That is very much the vibe of this podcast, is some of it that you do not expect to stay in will absolutely stay in.
The outtakes are the intakes.
Exactly right, yeah. We get to find out the real you. That is the beauty of the process.
Let me know what he's like.
I'll do some kind of like artist's depiction of the whole image and send it over.
Oh, gold. Yeah. Like in cult.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Can you draw me with a slightly smaller haircut? Because this is like double lockdown hair.
Well, what's good about that is, as you pointed out a moment ago, the light in your, would you call it your office?
it was my office, and now it's just kind of like a squat at the end of my garden.
Yeah, sure. Sounds good. But yeah,
it is the world famous Cool Thing Records office,
yeah,
which is being held together by gaffer tape. Instead of having sound insulation on the windows, I have a quilt which is gaffer taped and super glued to the wall covering the windows.
Classic. As well it should be. That is true rock and roll fashion.
I like it. Yeah. It makes me feel like I'm still living in my old flat. It's just the same as what it looks like in here, except it's got more sound insulation, I guess.
Yeah.
Didn't have any neighbours last time in my old flat, mate, so could really, really take the piss when it came to making loud noise.
Yeah, yeah, nice. I don't think I ever went to your flat. Did I?
Well, it was above a sex shop in Hadley, so...
I would remember that.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't exactly... well, I guess it was enticing for a certain kind of person, but certainly wasn't for me.
Yeah, it's not
I just slip in there and slip out again and just try to pretend life wasn't going as poorly as it was.
That's what you should do in a sex shop. Slip in, slip out.
I don't think I've ever been in one.
When you say sex shop, like, are you talking sort of sex toys or?
I never went in there, man, but we would occasionally get a delivery which would wrongly come to my door and I'd say, I don't need this.
This is clearly not for me.
I'm in here on my own. You know? In here just trying to write songs, just trying to survive life.
This isn't for me. You need to take that. Actually, leave it. Thank you. See you later.
Yes. Please take this rubber phallic item away from me. It's making me feel inadequate.
Yeah. I've already got one in.
Blimey.
Not me. That was an impression of you.
No.
I have got one in.
I'm so highly strung, Simon. You need a crowbar.
Yeah, that is true. Now,
thanks for backing me up on it.
That's what I was saying. You were saying about your hair a minute ago. What happened there was you looked down and I couldn't see a thing because your hair blends into the background.
Well, that's my way of coping with not being able to get a haircut is just to have the same colour backdrop as my hair. So
yeah,
all you can see is my horribly emaciated, untanned face with big black rings under my eyes. I'm really, really aging well, Simon. I'm going from strength to strength.
Hey, man.
Occasionally, I see my wife look at me and just look at me almost sympathetically these days.
Yeah. So, I'd take that over the looks of disdain. I mean, I've been locked down with my fiance. I know you know her, but I don't mention.
Sounds like you're back in my old flat.
Yeah. I don't mention her name. She doesn't like it. And if I do, I'll bleep it out. So whenever I say, I'll bleep that out in the.
You're creating more post-production work for yourself here, Simon.
Yeah, I know. Well, the last time I mentioned the fact that I bleep out name every time I say, oh, I just done it again. The guest then went about saying it about 20 times. So,
I'm definitely going to back you up on not mentioning her name. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that.
No.
What's my point?
The public domain is becoming more and more scary to be even part of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the world in general is, because like we are talking now on the eve. Oh, so I've still not finished what I was saying before. Why was I not mentioning her name? Why was I mentioning her at all? Oh, that's right. We've been locked down together for a long time, and I'm all right with it. I'm perfectly fine. But she is growing weary of my attitude.
Take long walks from time to time.
Yeah. I've recently gone round to my parents to set up my drum kit in the studio in the back garden, and so that.
Well, if you need some sound insulation, mate, I'm available with some super glue, gaffer tape, and another bedspread. So
yeah,
feel free to call me. I can return the favour for this podcast.
Just put your hair up on the wall.
There's not enough wall.
Right, where was I going from there? That was been locked down with. We are here on the eve of another lockdown, and also the day of the US election, and it's a terrifying day.
I don't contest that.
No, although I just realized that we had this conversation earlier today and said let's not talk about politics.
No, I mean, it's fascinating in one, you know, from in one angle, I suppose, just to see it all play out and just how weird it all is, but yeah, I mean, let's see what happens, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, we're living through history right now.
Haven't we always been, though?
Well,
memorable history, though, this time. Some really important stuff's going on.
That is the difference. A lot of stuff that I've done in the past has been during quite insignificant times.
Yes, I feel you.
Yeah, with quite insignificant events as well. So it's all just, no one cares. That's where we're at.
But, I mean, on a serious note, it is frightening what's going on with
you know, with COVID, where it's been handled, and obviously the election in the States is deeply worrying as well. But yeah. In the absence of a different reality, probably best to focus on some of the positive things.
Absolutely. I mean, by the time this comes out, maybe Joe Biden will be in charge.
Maybe.
I mean, as we discussed earlier, I don't know whether that's good or not, but it's got to be better than Trump, surely.
I think I've given up affiliating my support politically with anyone, really.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't believe in Beatles. I just believe in tea.
Yeah, Teetles.
Good pun.
Oh, thank you. That's certainly a game that we play a lot, isn't it? So, the history of Luke and I've known Luke for longer than any other guest that I've had on so far, because I've known you coming on 18 years.
Yes, mate, man and boy. Yeah. Literally. Yes, we met in a den of iniquity back in the early noughties, yeah. Both trying to survive life then as we are now. And because you're a lovely human, you used to give me the occasional drive home and we became friends.
Yeah.
And, then musical adventures ensued in the subsequent years, and we became friends with lots of bizarre memories shared.
Yeah, a lot of bizarre memories. Good memories, but bizarre memories. But yeah, memories are terrible.
I would say the ratio of good to bad is definitely in the favour of good.
Oh, absolutely.
There have definitely been some scary moments as well on the road, dear boy.
Yeah.
Not because of your driving, though. Mainly because of just being in a van with Al. Bands, really.
Yeah.
You know, just the peripheral characters that are with us and the situations we find ourselves in, which are quite often convulsing before our eyes.
Our first trip to Cardiff in the back of a van, for instance.
I remember the day that Asylums had the record of the day on BBC Six, and you drove me and Jazz down to an in-store somewhere.
Oh yeah, in Portsmouth.
In your old van, that's right, in Portsmouth, and couldn't move. So I was in the boot. Not advisable,
no,
ladies and gentlemen,
not also,
and only ever done in the absolute worst case scenario would we do that. But
yes, it absolutely,
I think it was last minute.
I should point out, wasn't done while the van was in motion. It was only
absolutely not.
Only ever stationary, and yes. That is legally binding.
Damn right.
Yeah, that was a good day.
Yeah, I don't know what to. I remember it felt weird to have so little money and then have like record of the day that day.
Yeah.
I think we all felt a bit weird.
Yeah.
And then we went for a pint, didn't we? Is that right? And
maybe
more than one, and played a bit of pool. So, yeah, it wasn't a mad one, that one. It was just a strange day that
we were
playing a duo set, which is always feels weird because Henry and Mike are so sociable and loud.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Me and Jazz are so unsociable and quiet.
Yeah, it's nice.
That's why you're there.
Nice to have
fun.
A bit of respite. Well, I'm that middle ground. I'm sort of, I'm both loud and quiet.
Can that really happen? Telepathy, loud mind, quiet voice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, or no, quiet mind, loud voice. I don't know. One of those.
I don't have the correct term to apply to you, Simon.
Yeah.
I just say nice guy.
Yeah, that'll do. There's nothing in a thesaurus that really sums it up.
You are a bit of a thesaurus, actually, though, because
somewhat.
You always have ready information, whatever the predicament we're in.
Yeah, that's one of my skills.
Maybe that's more like a search engine than it is a.
Ask Steve's.
Yeah, ask Steve's, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Like the waiter. Ask Jeeves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I got the reference. Good.
Oh, good. Good.
Good pun. No, second good pun of the show, actually, man. I'll start chalking these up as we go through. If you can get to 10, I'll cut my hair on this show.
Oh, shit. Oh, cool. Right. Okay. I'll start marking them down.
I'm not going to do that, by the way. I can barely cut a carrot up.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And if you're doing it using your computer screen
clippers.
As a mirror.
I like to shave my my carrots using hair clippers.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going wrong.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
My cooking.
Right. What are you drinking, by the way?
Tea Pigs.
Which one?
Do you know what? In preparation for this show, I brought it with me. So here we go. It is Red Bush because I can't sleep at the best of times, so I thought I'd better have something without any caffeine in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wise choice. Yeah, a lot of those didn't have caffeine. I just chucked you a bag of various tea bags. I've got so many. I got sent like tons, hundreds.
Your hoarder.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've just started giving them away now. because
after lockdown they're gonna have to like take the roof off your house and lift you out.
Yeah,
it's gonna be surrounded with tea bags. Help! Free me from the tea.
Yeah, I mean it sounds like a wonderful problem to have, but
could be a bit annoying if you don't have any water.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully. Hopefully, I'll still have water. With, yeah. It's still the 21st century, so I don't see that going back anytime soon. So, you speak of one that doesn't have caffeine, and I warned you when I gave you those tea bags earlier that you shouldn't have those two that I put in the sandwich bag.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was one of those? Was one of those the tea pig ones?
No. No, I gave you just a separate sandwich bag with two extra tea bags in it, which are like unlabeled.
I'll make sure I'll put those ones in the lead cupboard.
Yeah,
and just leave them in there like kryptonite.
So those ones, they were given to me by a comedian who I had on called Abigail Shimon, and because she was talking about it on a podcast, and then she went to America for a trek. And then came back again because she's American. She knew about this tea from a company called Celestial Seasonings. And that tea is called Morning Thunder. And when she gave it to me, she said, don't have this after 1 p.m.
Cool.
Because I remember the day when like you climbed into the van. We were driving to a gig somewhere. You climbed into the van and you just turned to Jazz and said, have you heard of Bullet Coffee? And you looked so wired when you said it. Because I think you discovered it that day, and you were like bouncing off the walls.
Yeah, there was a time where the kind of experimentation with caffeine was reaching its natural conclusion for me and my friends. We actually landed finally on a brew called Death Wish Coffee, which was about 10 times the strength of a regular coffee.
Good grief. And,
we weren't trying to be macho or anything. Genuinely, we were just trying to maintain creative life in a band and work full time and run a label all at the same time, and needless to say, caffeine was required. And that stuff's intense, man. I wouldn't recommend you drink that. You'd say goodbye to a good night's sleep after you've had that for possibly a few months.
Well, that tea that I gave you is the tea equivalent of that. Because I don't drink coffee anyway, so I'm not used to sort of intense amounts of caffeine. But when I drink
I don't think you should drink coffee, Si.
No,
I really don't think you should. It could be dangerous.
When I drank that tea on a podcast, I ended up sort of shaking. So definitely have it. I think you'll like it, but have it early.
Yeah, these days I've switched out the coffee for sort of herbal teas and meditation, because I'm normally shaking anyway for just sheer anxiety. I think anything that sort of gives me a little kind of sense of relief is probably a little bit better than coffee. But sure. I do still love the whole experience of buying coffee. I've got to say, I'd very much like to. I'm not a comedian, but if I was, I would love to be on Comedians in Cars drinking coffee.
Yeah,
but I just wouldn't do any comedy, and I'm not particularly into cars, so maybe I should just do a show with you just called Drinking Coffee.
Two people drinking coffee
at the end, and that's the show.
is that nice? Yeah, not bad. Yeah, good. That's it.
But you want to try the Death Wish? Yeah, that's the real good stuff. That's the season clincher, that one.
So what have you been up to? Because obviously, we're about to go into a second lockdown. During the first lockdown, your most recent album was released, right? That was during the lockdown?
Yeah, towards the end of it, actually. By the time it came out, on the 17th of July, things had relaxed in the sort of 3 or so weeks leading up to that. So, you know, good old-fashioned things like being able to buy the record, were possible. But, genuinely, that first lockdown on it, sort of in my own personal space, was I had an okay time because I was able to just keep working on stuff for the label and writing a lot of music, a lot of stuff for the band, but also other little bits of projects that were coming in, and just was able to spend some time with my son, really. Who was born like last November, so, and I felt really grateful to have just been given sort of like an extended paternity with him, and being able to mix that with creativity. I'm you know, it doesn't negate the fact that what was going on was just so troubling, you know. And I certainly don't mean that, you know, what I experienced, you know, is something I want to keep doing or anything like that. It was just, I got through that one okay, it was all right. And this one, I'm actually going to be working through it because I work in education a few days a week. So I don't know what to expect really, man. And that's the most sad aspect of it, you know, is just, you know, what's happening, you know, to people's, you know, kind of livelihoods and their loved ones. And I just don't know what to say. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I just hope we can get a grip on it really soon and move to a better period. And aside from that, all the people I know in the arts are struggling quite a lot. Who a majority of my friends are in the arts. So yeah, you could say it's an echo chamber, but it's, I'm not sort of getting on my high horse or anything. It's just really tough for them. A lot of them are freelancers and stuff. So
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Just trying to find routes through and help them in any way we can. And just, I don't know, try and keep some, keep hopeful. And I know we had, like, we do a radio show, as you know, so you know, we had a few of our friends like Sadie Hassler and another lovely lady
who's coming on the podcast soon
called The Zine. Yeah, so I don't know, so we were doing bits like that as well to stay kind of occupied. But as I say, this next one's got a different feel to it. Like, as we go into it, it feels a little bit, you know, Christmas is coming.
Yeah,
it's kind of a bit jarring that we're still in this limbo. So I don't know, man. I mean, just peace and love, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that is that's the key. Is it's, well, yeah, I mean, I had a bit of a breakdown during the first one and got made redundant and all sorts, so it's very fun. And now still haven't got a job, so it's good. But obviously
you'll always have a job, both working with my band, it's always there for you. And even though you probably would want to get rid of that job and work somewhere more pleasant than Asylums Incorporated, you are also a brilliant comedian, so
thank you very much.
In every inherent negative, there's got to be some small positive, or maybe something, or
yeah, fingers crossed,
manifest from this time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the biggest issue for comedians. Obviously, like, you guys, you've not been gigging or sort of really playing together, because you did a live stream gig recently, right? Was that live streamed or was it just recorded live?
Yeah, it was recorded. So we did a rehearsal a month or so back, the last opportunity that we could, really. And it was the first time that we had been in a room to play music. We had met up a couple of weeks before the album came out.
We did signings and stuff, right?
Some stuff and what have you. But that was the first time we played music. And it was just a bloody joy, man. You know, I love playing with those guys. They're not only incredible musicians, but they're just great friends of mine. So yeah. It's always just a hang, really, when we meet up. So we did do that, but it hasn't felt distant, really, within the band. We talk all the time. We're on WhatsApp, taking the piss all day, every day, and just sharing stuff. And me and, you know, Jazz started working on some of the new tunes that I'd been writing about, you know, maybe a good few months ago when we were able to start meeting up. And we did one yesterday. It was the last one for a while, but we're going to pick it up remotely, build a little setup. So, you know, in some ways, it's been good for productivity. You know, Jazz won't be working as much for the next couple of weeks, and you know, we've got some stuff planned. But yeah, you know, we haven't actually played a gig, although I've been playing gigs for years and years and years and years. And I tried to find a little mental loophole, really, for myself, which was like that, you know, some of my favorite bands like REM, Beatles, you know, so there are other examples. Brian Jones, Tom Asker have all made like records on live hiatuses that are some of their best records.
Okay.
So I kind of thought, well, maybe it's like the gift of time. Maybe I can focus on the next record a bit more rather than touring and things. So
yeah,
I've always been a record lover more than anything, which is why we do the label. I would even consider myself a record lover before musician. Do you know what I mean? I'm a real collector and stuff. So that's the sort of way I've approached it, really, is just to try and pull something out of the ether that's better than what we've done before, you know.
Yeah, nice. How's it going, the writing? Because obviously, so you've just released the third album, which you were saying you think is your best work. I just realized why I said it. You think it's your best work?
Well, I mean, I just think it's probably like like most people that make stuff, you know, with a unit, you know, it's sort of, I feel like you have your kind of first surge of, you know, where it's coming naturally, and then you have to sort of evolve, and that's always quite painful when you evolve into that next period. You have to take a lot of risks. And I just think like third records tend to consolidate things that have been good about what you've done, and you can sort of pick the best attributes that you have and make something. I think, you know, what came to mind for me was things like London Calling is a bit like that. It's like a kind of third record that really sort of was a culmination of the previous two. And then, you know, things like Park Life, you know, Holy Bible by the Manic Street Preachers. I love the Mets' third album, Strange Pieces. There's all sorts of examples. I love In Utero, you know. So that's kind of what we wanted with that record. But the next one that we make, you know, we'd like to be a real development again, sort of.
So
I've got a very clear idea of what we're doing, you know, musically and visually on the next one. Just it takes, you know, a year or so to just bring it to fruition, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even without a lockdown.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to, you know, crack on, really.
Yeah, nice. And that, can you hear that, by the way?
It does sound like there's a small rodent making its way towards your pants.
Yeah, no, there's already one in there. there's a lot of fireworks on outside.
Oh, blimey. Yeah. You know, they're still giving it large.
It's real. Presumably fireworks. But I mean, this is it's a Wednesday evening.
Maybe Biden won.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, around here, I was going to a birthday party like earlier this year before lockdown hit, and I can't remember what had happened that day. It's something to do with Brexit, and I think it was just basically announced that day that like sort of no deal was happening or whatever it was, and we got in a taxi to go and meet my mates, and the taxi driver just went, "Oh, are you off to a Brexit party?" I was like, "Oh no, we're not."
A Brexit party? What's a Brexit party?
I think just celebrating that we're getting out of the EU. But I don't think he even understood what the EU was, because I think he thought that we were leaving Europe, which isn't how that works. We're still very much part of Europe. But
Just kind of having mental imagery of like Eyes Wide Shut by Stanley Kubrick with like starring Nigel Farage, you know, just deeply troubling prospect.
Yeah.
But I guess that's not a Brexit party.
No, I don't think so.
It's what you said.
No. Yeah, so, well, later on that journey, he also made a joke about how women can't drive. And
great, another sexist, just what we need.
Yeah, my fiance just, we were trying to remember what it was she said the other day, because it was just such a brutal comment. Like, it was just one quick comment, and then he didn't say anything else until we got to the destination. Just tore him apart, like, in one sentence, and he just went, yeah, okay, shut up.
There is a lot of variety in the cab drivers in Southend. There's some real classic guys and girls. There's one guy that likes to stop the car and sing. He's a crooner,
right?
And he really can sing. But it is peculiar when you're on an industrial estate waiting to get out, and you're getting you're getting sung to, and you sort of don't know the guy's name even, you know.
Yeah.
And there was this other guy, and Jazz will back me up on this. It sounds like an absolute lie, but I swear it's true. There was a guy that took us back from Southend once, back when I was living in the sex shop flat. So we were going all the way from Southend, all the way down to London Road to Hadley. And he was telling us all this like really weird, dark stuff. And then he was like, you know, he's a healer. He was saying, I'm a healer and I can make smoke come out my fingers. And me and Jazz, and actually Emma, Jazz's girlfriend, we're all in this cabin. We were kind of like looking at each other through like the sort of like, you know, the kind of mirror and stuff. And we're just like, what the hell? And then he stopped the car to let me out. And he just did this thing that sounded like he was trying to push, you know, a kind of
a tennis ball, out of his
large object out of his anus.
Yeah.
And he pushed me, and then literally smoke came out of his fingers. And we were like, and like Jazz will back me up. We couldn't believe our eyes. I've never seen anyone do that. I don't know what it was or how he did it. And I just never even saw him again. But I was like, I almost wanted to call the cat. I was like, who is he? You know, he's brilliant. You know, like, you know, this guy shouldn't be driving cabs. This guy should be like healing people, man. He can do it.
That
but
guy
who knows, man?
Is
maybe just had a fag tucked under his sleeve or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That guy is in one of two places now. He's either on his way to Britain's Got Talent, or he pushed too hard once and just spontaneously combusted.
Just disappeared. He's just like in the monolith from 2001 Space Odyssey, just floating through space going, I could have been a contender.
Oh, it just evaporated, yeah.
Evaporation is one way. It's probably quite a pleasant way to go. If you were going to go, Mr. Branch, how would you like to go? Well, I'd like to evaporate.
Sure. Yeah, it's better than you know, drowning. What?
No, yeah, I don't
well, it
want
is
to
better
make
than
a comparison. I wouldn't like to find out. But can you imagine looking down and seeing your
It's the opposite of drowning.
Liquid feet evaporating and just thinking, oh no, that's only the first bit of me. And then it's just all the way up to your, like, lips.
Yeah.
That's the last bit. Oh, I've only got half a head and it's water as well.
If you could choose which bit of you would evaporate first, what would it be? I'm writing that down. That is a question I would
ask the head. Probably the head, man, right? And then you can't feel anything.
What, like, so you'd start sort of top of the head or start in the middle and sort of burst out?
Right from the brain. The brain evaporates first.
Brain first,
and then the skull. And I've just got like this baggy face that's got no bone in it.
Yeah, like a reverse microwave. You're sort of, you disappear.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like a deflated whoopee cushion.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to, that is a question. I like to write down questions that I'm going to ask again. It's something that I got inspiration from. I would say stole, but I don't want to say I stole it. I got inspiration from Richard Herring's podcast where he has emergency questions, and I've called mine, as inspired by Stuart Goldsmith, Team Emergency Questions.
Very, very good of you, and very diligent, I might add.
So that's one of them. There's another question that I think I've stopped asking now because it's just a little bit dark. However, right, now you're slightly older than me. So I will ask you this. Do you drink hot drinks in hot weather to cool you down?
No, but I do wear coats and big jumpers when it's hot.
Yeah, that is true.
I don't know why I do it. I feel there's some parallel logic in there, and I never feel hot when I'm wearing them. I think it's because the material hangs off of the body.
Yeah. And
absorbs the heat, but it still stays off the body because they're normally baggy and retro sportswear, whatever, that I've got a bit of a fetish for. So I don't drink hot drinks in hot weather, but I do wear warm clothes in warm weather.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the same thing, but it's...
I would suggest that it is essentially the same thing. Slightly different. Arguably weirder.
Thanks. Yeah. I just hate my body, so I just want to cover it up.
Hey, no.
So other people aren't inflicted with it.
I love your body. You should wear it proudly.
I'll try.
Yeah,
but it might have a Mickey Mouse, you know, kind of baseball top over the top of it.
Yeah, right. What's your go-to tea?
Peppermint and licorice herbal tea every day. I kind of got into that, you know, through doing long vocal sessions and stuff. And I just find if I go for coffee straight away, it's going to be a certain kind of day, which is quite manic. And I'm always up for that once in a while, but when I reach for the tea, it's like I'm admitting to myself I'd like to take it slightly easier today.
Yeah, sure.
And I have four cups, and one of them says sad dog, happy dog, cool dog. And then there's one that I never use, which I can't remember. I don't know. It's just dog. But I also compulsively try to pick happy dog, even if I'm feeling really low. So it's all about those first bits of the day, right?
Absolutely.
If you can get them right, you can build a solid foundations and attempt to have a good one.
Nice.
Everybody that comes to my house never says they want one of those teas, though. So
it sounds great.
Just a Yorkshire tea, you know, builder's tea or whatever.
Yeah. No, that sounds really nice. I'd have one of those.
Well, you can come round and I'll give you one.
Oh, thank you. I believe I will. I nearly brought one.
But not for 4 weeks, otherwise,
no,
you know,
of course.
You'll go to prison.
Yes. Yeah, you'll go to prison and be given COVID. That is, that's what you get.
I really do hope that's not true.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the British justice system.
A lockdown within a lockdown for Cy Deaves.
Yeah.
Like Inception.
I mean, technically, that's probably the best thing to get because, you know, I can't imagine you're going to prison for long because you don't go to prison that long if you kill someone. But I should think if you go to prison, then the best thing you can do is get COVID because then you'll be in isolation. But like... in the best possible kind of
I understand the logic. Well, but I wonder if the penalty for drinking that tea is in prison, you have to do the same amount of time as it takes to drink it in prison. You drink it, then you do the time for the crime.
But like 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like a drive through prison.
I'll do that. That sounds fine.
Oh, I had a terrible time in prison. What did you go in for? Tea? How long were you in? 9 minutes and then my parole came up.
Yeah, I got out for good behaviour.
So they moved me to a Lidl warehouse, and now I'm doing time there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take that. I need the work.
Amen, brother.
do you dunk a biscuit?
I don't eat things like biscuits. No, not really.
Yeah. You're,
if I'm going to have anything, it will be sweets probably.
Oh, okay. Would you dunk a sweet in your tea? Would you dunk like a licorice or salt in a licorice tea?
No, but I would probably extend to dunking a bagel. I've always felt that bagels belong in that set of positive items that can be consumed before lunchtime that can set the day up. I like a bagel.
Sure.
I think it's like a cake for people that don't like cakes, and
savoury cake. Know,
it's normally got some inherent New Yorkiness to the wrapper, and I have fond memories of New York, so it makes me feel like I'm having coffee in New York for a brief moment before I realize I'm in Westcliff.
Yeah.
And Times Square most certainly isn't at the top of my road, although there is a shop and you can buy some quite interesting items in there.
Yeah, it's a funny little shop, that.
It is.
Yeah. And
let's leave it at that.
Yeah. And also a lovely little pub.
Oh yeah, pub's great. Yeah, might as well give it a shout out. It's probably going through a bit of a rough patch at the minute, but
yeah, well, they're open.
West Road
as
Tap is a very good place for a beer.
Yeah, sorry, I spoke right over the top of that. There's West Road Tap, in case you're not listening. It's owned by my friend Will Waring, who is a lovely man, and they're open during this lockdown. If you're local, they're open during this lockdown as an off license. So
I need to tell a lovely story about Cider Eves. On Jazz's stag do, which I was the best man for, and I was in charge of ruining it. We went to the West Road Tap for a beer, and the lovely Cy Deaves had left some money behind the bar for everyone to have a drink while he was at work, and he met us later on. What a guy. I mean, I was genuinely, and I mean this, it brought a tear to my eye at how nice that was, as everyone scoffed into their beers. Some thoughtful soul had done that.
That was I didn't do that for the praise. I wanted to do it because I couldn't be there earlier because I had to work. But it was genuinely like all night long, about every 10 minutes, someone else came up to me and thanked me for putting money behind the bar, which was very nice indeed.
I thought it was very nice. I mean, that's the last thing I can remember, but it was very nice.
Yeah, yeah, it all got sideways after that. There's a photo of us that I came across the other day of us outside the Mews.
Yeah, I was in real trouble at that point.
Yeah.
So I asked for have you ever had this when you get so drunk and then you're thinking, right, I need milk.
So
I went for a kind of White Russian. They gave me one and I was like, man, that was great. I'm going to have another one. And they didn't have the ingredients and they made me something else. And it was like lethally strong. And I was clinging on before the first White Russian anyway for dear life. And that one just put me in the sort of in the you know where you go when it goes wrong on a piss up.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just like, my inner monologue was like, okay, okay, act normal. Here comes Jazz. Hello, mate. How's it going? Go to the toilet. Throw up. Try to get home somehow. You know.
Yeah.
The little inner monologue gets very pronounced at that crisis point on a piss up.
Classic times.
I didn't even recognize the voice.
What, your voice?
Yeah, it just sounded like some whiskey soaked kind of Tennessee
blues
man. But
who
it certainly wasn't me. God knows
face?
What they gave me the drink.
Yeah. My suggestion after a White Russian, if they don't have the ingredients for another White Russian, a grasshopper.
Eat a grasshopper?
No, have the drink.
Is it made out of grasshoppers?
Yes. Yeah, crushed up.
Crushed up their testicles.
Yeah, it's delicious.
To make a finite paste of which they extract the flavour.
Yeah, it's very weird. But
No wonder you gave up bar work, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, they only really make them in zoos, to be honest. It's,
Hold the fort, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to milk the testicles of the grasshopper. Sorry, don't forget your gloves.
Oh, no. Oh, put it straight in the sheath.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Good grief.
Instead of the mixing, but he just goes, no, let's move on. This is getting so sort of weird with a slightly bizarre sexual undercurrent to it, which wasn't intended.
One of the times that has been the most drunk I've ever been was in the vicinity of that bar. You weren't there, but it was a New Year's Eve a good few years ago. And I got so drunk the following day, I had to hold onto a pillar because I was falling off of a sofa because I couldn't remember how to sit up straight. And for a while, I was so hungover that I forgot how to use my legs.
Oh, but, dear.
Like, I couldn't, my brain couldn't tell my body what muscles I needed to use to get my legs to move. It was...
What had you been drinking?
Spectacular. Oh, no idea. But I'd been drinking all night. The thing was, I wasn't sick or anything. I was just very, very drunk. But I was having a great time, and I remember nearly all of it. However, this is testament to how drunk I was. At one point, we were in the Cliff Pub, the gay bar in Southend, what used to be the only
one. It always fills me with hope when I walk past that. It looks great in there.
It's really nice, yeah. And the lights are really just bright and enjoyable. Sounds weird. You've got to see that pub to understand that. Anyone else listening is going to be like, what the f*** are they talking about? It's fine. But I was in there, and I was sat down. Like, presumably my friend had been talking to my other friend. That was what I thought. Because I'm sitting there at this table, and I looked up and I saw my mate Tom across the table. And I'd not seen him all night. And I just went, oh, hello, mate. How are you doing? How long have you been here? And he just looked at me and said, are you being serious? And I was like, what? And he said, Si, we've been talking for about 15 minutes. And like, I just...
You sure you weren't drinking sodium pentothal?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd just forgotten mid-conversation that I'd been talking to him, which I think is pretty spectacular. The worst thing was...
Maybe he's pouring the arse off you.
Yeah. But I said to him, like, oh, where's Chris, his boyfriend? I was like, where's Chris? I've not seen him in ages. And he just went, he's just... You were talking to him for about 10 minutes straight. Really?
Drunken amnesia.
Yeah,
not good.
But I've had it the following day, you know, like everyone has, I think, where you just forget stuff from the night before. But while I was out, I just sort of looked down and looked up and went, hello, mate, where you been?
It's like, mate, yeah. It's pretty, those it's ones where they, it comes back to you the next day, though, and it's like memento or something like that. You're just kind of like, there's little clues, and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Like, but, I'm glad to say I've only had one really horrendous sort of night out in the last year and a half, which just was that visceral. I can't go into it though because it's that bad.
Start crying. We don't.
That one's in the vault. I didn't really do anything personally, but it just got more and more escalated, and I was just trapped in the night out. I couldn't get home.
Yeah.
So nevertheless.
Oh, I've been there. Like you find yourself, you're out, and like, especially when, because I used to live in Rochford, which was harder to get home from Southend than like where I live now. But I don't think I've been out since... I don't really go out anymore. Well, you know, we're locked down, so I don't go out. But generally, I'll drive or drive or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like you find yourself, you're on a night out and you're tired and you want to go home. But the other person that is going in your direction is like, oh, no, I'm not going home yet. Like, I'm going to stay out for a couple more. So you're just like, oh, okay. And you just end up stuck.
I'm the kind of person, though, Si, that if that's the case, I would get a cab from Perth in Scotland all the way to my house if it meant getting home.
Yeah.
When I've had enough, I just don't care. Yeah. I walk home. You know, I just run out of steam so quickly. But, you know, I'm not saying it's a good thing. Just
no.
I think I hate being trapped in someone else's fun situation, which feels like work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I would suggest that you and I, we're probably in the same boat, and I'm pretty sure we've talked about this before. So, I don't think I've actually given context. Like, so I, just for the listeners, I used to drive, then I got busy with my job, and now I don't have a job, and when we come out of lockdown, I'm sure I'll do it again. But I used to drive Luke's band, Asylums, all around the country. And hopefully we'll also drive to the Isle of Wight Festival next year, if that's happening.
Yeah, that is happening, buddy. It's locked in.
Yeah, well, unless we're locked down, is my point.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, fingers crossed we're not. Because that'll be, like, who's going on that? That's obviously you guys in Asylums, me, Gail Porter.
Correctamundo, and a friend of mine called Johnny Fizz, who I do some work for.
Yeah.
Got an advertising agency, the guy. And yeah, he's been really good to us, so... just sort of returning the favor, really.
Yeah.
Really took care of us during the lockdown, gave us work and stuff. And I was like, you're coming.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
that'd be a hell of a weekend.
Yeah. Well, you know what it's like when we go away, man. I mean, the gig is like,
I think the last festival we went to, you, Jazz and me found a mojito hut and then sat on a sculpture next to it and just drank mojitos for several hours.
I think there was a football match on and the real men went and did that. And we just kind of did that because we don't know anything about football, really. Oh, well, actually, Jazz is deceptively talented at football.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's really good, you know, like everything he bloody does. But yeah. I remember that fondly. I love the whole, because, you know, life's so hectic. When we get to go away and do gigs and do, you know, bigger festivals and stuff, it always just feels like Jolly Boy's outing or something like that. You know, we never take it too seriously. I have to admit, I'm hard work when there's a London gig because I find that all quite stressful to get there.
Yeah, London's stressful.
And stuff. So, you know, I'm sure you don't need me to remind you how anxiety-ridden I am during those times. But, you know, I've weaned myself off the intense coffee and what have you. So I'm a little bit more zen these days. But not much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't wait to do the festivals as and when.
Really
gutted we didn't get to go to Glastonbury on a sort of selfish level. Of course, I understand why not on a real level, and I don't really mind. But
yeah,
that was the one I was looking forward to.
Oh, it'd be lovely. Yeah. Are you booked for next year?
Always have such a great time when we go. Me and you have been twice together, haven't we?
So yeah.
Would have been a third time.
Yeah, and the last time we saw Radiohead, and I cried.
It was a good set.
It was amazing.
You know, it was kind of, there's some, I don't know what it was, that there was some emotional thing going on, like a catharsis during that show. I think he just lost his wife, hadn't he? I think there's something that happened and it all felt laced with just like real, real intensity of emotion. And
yeah,
I think we were all pretty impressed. I mean, earlier that day, I mean, weird to think of it now, but you know, I watched Jeremy Corbyn do a speech on the pyramid stage, but in order to be able to be close enough to be able to sort of listen to it and sort of feel the moment, I had to sit for a Craig David set, and there definitely weren't many other people that looked like me in that around. Right. I was just surrounded by
that's right next to you.
It was weird. It was like parents and their children, really.
Yeah,
obviously kind of really had a great time during the garage period.
It's quite good, actually.
Children, they were kind of reliving it again. It was kind of cute to see. I just didn't know any of the music, so I was just lost, completely lost. And then, you know, kind of, well, you know, all these years later, it's so weird how he was kind of framed as the hero at that point, and now, you know, it's such a different story.
Yeah,
it's weird, weird. You know, time changes things. So.
It really is. Well, actually, I just remembered another moment from that Glastonbury. Was that? I can't remember. Is that time or? When we went before, and we ended up in, because there was definitely when you, me and Jazz went, we were dancing in like some weird dance tent over one side. But at one point, didn't we end up in like a cabaret tent, but like there was no one else in there? And it's like 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's correct.
Morning.
I mean, we just, I think there was a lot of, the night before we had played with, Black Grape.
Yeah.
In London, and we had driven through the night. And
that's
they.
Right.
I don't know if you remember, man, but the band that were on before us, so they were first on the bill, we were second on the bill, then Black Grape, they couldn't play. They got there too late. So they asked us to play like double the amount of time. And we were, obviously it was even a year before the first album come out. So we weren't short on material, but we hadn't rehearsed it all up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we just rehearsed a strict set. So we did this kind of slightly patchy set, and they gave us a massive, like magnum of like rum, and we sort of had a little bit of it that night, and then when we'd finished our performance at Glastonbury, lo and behold, the old rum came out, and I don't know, it went pretty wild from that point on.
Wasn't that also the gig where
very fun at night though?
Lots
of memorable moments, a lot of which can't be included on this show, but I do remember the cabaret tent. I certainly do. And I remember at some point, someone was hugging a tree and just feeling very scared.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think that might have been Jazz. Nevertheless.
I've recollections of that. It could have been any of us.
Yes, I do. I do remember having to check Jazz was still alive in the tent that night. Do you remember that? Like, because he looks like a corpse when he's sleeping. He just doesn't move.
Yeah, that does sound about right.
He's laying on his face as well.
But that was also the night that Henry, I was sharing a tent with Henry, and he disappeared, and at about 5:30 in the morning just sort of crawled through the tent, was absolutely soaking wet, and just went straight out. And then because
whenever you go
such a long
Henry,
man,
he just goes in at a million. He's having a good time, unless he just won't. He won't go to bed. He just drink every beer in the whole world.
I had no idea where he'd gone. He just came.
I love that about him, man. He knows how to have a good time, and he don't feel bad about any of it. He just enjoys himself. What a lad.
He instigated
he loves to wake us up, though, doesn't he?
Oh yeah.
He comes back. He got in our tent before he came to you. He was going hello, and it was just like interfering with us and stuff. And then he obviously went and done it to you as well. He's just been out partying on his own for hours.
But my favourite thing about that as well is because he's such a long man, his head was pressed up against the side of the tent. Because of the quality of the tent that it was, and it was raining outside, he just essentially got rained on. Like, his head touching the tent meant it was no longer waterproof.
It's raining hen. Hallelujah.
Oh, yeah. Spectacular.
I just lost you one of your pun points for that pun being so poor.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if anything, I got an extra pun point because you, you've gone into the minus.
You're
now
3 points up from me, then, just like Biden is with Trump.
Is it that close?
It was last time I checked, but I could be way off. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sure Trump's overtaken him and he's winning by now.
He's driving around every state in America with a dump truck full of Democrat votes.
God.
Shouldn't laugh, really. It could be real. I really sincerely hope it isn't.
Wouldn't surprise me. That's what I was going to say. In the guise of partying, sort of whilst we have sort of had wild times partying, and like, you know, just drinking and sort of going mental, because none of us are drugs folk, but we do like a booze. But
a booze.
Oh, several boozes.
Several boozes.
Yeah. I think genuinely the reason that I've never had any interest in sort of any level of narcotics, and this is a story that I tell all the time, is so we know a guy who we call Suicide Pete, because we've long since said that if you cut him open he would bleed cocaine. That is his personality. But we used to work in a dive bar. We used to work in a dive bar. Was that how we met? I don't know.
You're making us sound like the Pet Shop Boys now.
Yeah.
In a dive bar.
No, so we used to work in a drug den. No, a sex shop.
The Sunrooms in South End. We used to work in the Sunrooms. Essentially full of hippies and weirdos and us.
And like, I've heard a couple of stories, but your one always amuses me about Suicide Pete, where you went downstairs to the kitchen because he worked there occasionally, and you went downstairs to the kitchen and found him pressed up against the wall, completely flat, and you said, "Are you all right, Pete?" And he said, "Yeah." Yeah, I think I might be wallpaper.
Yes, I mean, what do you say to that when someone tells you they think they're wallpaper? It's like, buddy, I'm going to call you a cab. You need to go to hospital. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, I mean, they were different times, man. I mean,
that was the reason that I've got no interest in ketamine.
Mate, I'm mad enough about the drugs, you know what I mean? Music's the drug, you know what I mean? That's the one. But, you know, yeah, I agree with you, man. Being around that kind of stuff is, you know, I don't think it's cool. He was a great guy as well.
Yeah, really still
great
is.
Great
still
drummer,
around.
Played with like Ronnie Wood, played with Wilco.
Yeah.
I really could do it. Just, you know, life had just stitched him up a little bit and he just landed there. But he was always lovely to us, wasn't he, you know?
Yeah, he's a lovely bloke. He came into the drum shop that I used to work in, late last year, I think, and he bought a drum kit. So he's getting back into it.
Oh, great, man. Nice. I mean, he did reach out to me a few times and he was always very, I think, you know, I don't know if you remember, we had a lock-in and he said, you know, we said, like, are you okay, man? You know, and he just sort of said, yeah, I'm just depressed. Yeah. I'm not hurting anyone else. And I just thought, okay, that's a perspective you don't often just hear, that level of honesty.
Yeah.
And I just had so much empathy from that point on. And he used to come to our rehearsals and just watch us rehearse and stuff. Yeah. And he was no trouble. He never used to bring any of that weirdness in. He just
absolutely.
Good music fan that he is, you know.
Yeah. Always just a lovely bloke.
There were lots of lovely people that we met during those days, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was actually one of them I met 3 days ago, still after all this time, Aaron Shrimpton.
Yeah.
He's currently making a film.
Who also briefly worked at the pub.
He did, exactly. You know, he's always playing that harmonica, do you remember? But,
yeah.
I used to go back to his, and we used to listen to Tom Waits and stuff, and I can't explain it any, but they were lost years, really, weren't they? They were none of us were doing particularly well in any area of our lives.
Yeah.
We were kind of trying to just make ends meet working in this bar. All of us were creative people, which is probably why we ended up there, because we're trying to keep that available time to go on tours and, you know, all the different bits and bobs that we're involved in. And they were lost. I've never had a period of my life which was like that. And I learned a lot. I feel that I learned a lot from that, maybe even more than at any other time in my life, because I got my first reviews in music magazines while I was working there. Got my first radio play while I was working there. You know, met the arts community, you know, for the first time, although I didn't recognize them as such. You know, they all became the next generation of people doing stuff in this town, really.
Yeah.
DJ, you know, all the guys that formed Junk come through there.
Yeah, guys from the Horrors played there.
Horrors, these New Puritans came through there when we were doing, I think a little bit later, me and Cam were doing a club night there. And so in a weird kind of way, it was a little bit before social media hadn't really taken over.
Yeah.
At all. Yeah, just a good few years of just being a bohemian mess, wasn't it, really? You know,
and
came out the other side of it, you know, slightly wiser, but in slightly poorer health, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I had some good times working there. You know, we had a lot of experiences, fun, interesting, or otherwise, but
boring.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never forget that night when, remember that night that brawl broke out and we were both upstairs?
I remember many brawls there, man.
But there was the one in particular where the bar was like covered in empty glasses and a woman turned around to grab one. You grabbed them all. And then Andy Cap, where there was like just a big sort of ball of smoke and then fists like flying out.
Got some vague memory of that, man.
Yeah, there was that, and then like blood just shot up the wall, and I was like, I don't want to be here anymore.
I used to ride my sister's bike all the way to the Sunrooms because I couldn't afford. It would take all my money if I had to get a cab home at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. or whatever. So I'd always finish the night with a on a purple girl's bike, cycling back to Hadley where I lived, my parents at the time, and I just remember thinking, this isn't going to be a highlight for me. and I had some stupid logic where, like, because I'd always had a few drinks, because it's the only way to get through those kind of long shifts. And
it was
when you desperately want to be a musician and, you know, your life's just dissipating and going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And I used to ride down the wrong side of the road so I could see anything coming. again, that's parallel logic for you, but I'm a different person. And I have been for many, many, many years, but back then, Gordon Bennett, I'm so lucky to still be here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then, yeah, I met you and you gave me the occasional lift home and gave me the sporadic breaks from my kind of tour dear Westcliff cycle rides.
Yeah, I mean, we just drove home and then, like, obviously, like, you sort of lived near Canada and then you'd both be telling me about different bands and then I'd be like, have you heard this album? Sort of whacking on the Mars Volta. Sort of.
Yeah, yeah. I remember going to see Mars Volta with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. It was like their first London gig, wasn't it?
2006 at Brixton Academy.
And I seem to remember you were really banging to that instrumental post-rock band that Tom used to look after.
65 Days of Static.
Yeah, 65 Days of Static, yeah.
Yeah.
Who later got a lot of acclaim from Robert Smith of The Cure, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he really was a fan. I think he booked them for The Meltdown.
Oh, wow.
Kind of cool. And he also booked one of the bands that Cool Thing looks after, Indian Queens. That's how I know that. I was like, oh great, they got a break, you know what I mean, because they were a small band at the time. Like, I think it was like self-release, maybe that first record. It definitely wasn't widely available, but very cool record which you introduced me to. It was an interesting time because we were still being fed music through MTV and the music publications and radio, centralized media. You know, like it had always been. So that was kind of the last time that music culture was still kind of that way. And then it all started to fragment, obviously, with, you know, as the internet and social media became so kind of ubiquitous. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying one is better than the other, but it was interesting to find, you know, I probably wouldn't have read a 65 Days of Static review in any magazine at that point. They were kind of word of mouth band, really, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I first saw them at Chinnery's.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, the only reason I went down to see that was I was pals with Mikey, who was playing with Get Cake, Wear Cake, Fly at the time.
Cool, cool.
And so, yeah, they were playing there and I got there and 65 Days of Static were on and I was like, I've forgotten who I've come to see. Who's this? This is amazing.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Jazz was saying that he saw, we were talking yesterday when we were jamming, about the excerpts. I don't know if you know that band, but he's a big fan of theirs. And the guy that mixed our record, Jeanette Cabray, and that recently did that live session for us as well, Dave Ehringer, he produced quite a few of their albums. And Jazz was just saying, oh, I've been thinking about them a little bit. And I saw them at the Railway, played to two people. And he was saying the singer like took the snare drum off at the end of the set and like put it in the middle of this empty room and like put a mic and he was just banging it. Just all his guitar was just like on stage still just like feeding back. And he was like, Jazz was like, it's one of the most influential and fantastic gigs I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, like listen to their music. It's like, I don't know who, I think it's the singer that writes that music, but you know, they're incredibly like well-crafted pop songs that could, you know, easily work in other genres for other people and stuff. Very talented. And, you know, they've made a lot of records, but not again, like 65, they're a band that don't get, you know, that much attention. I think their last record was got the most, but I love that finding those little bands, you know, that you just, they're kind of, they're special to you and stuff and soundtrack a bit of your life. I think they're the best ones, really.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's some that I sort of come to later in life that I'd never heard at the time. Like, I got into Reuben a bit late.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, sort of Jamie Lemon started coming out with more stuff. And
yeah.
I know him, thanks to you. So
I wouldn't say, you know, I've known Jamie for 15 years. We did a gig together for a homeless charity with a band called Jet Plane Landing. This wasn't with Asylum, this was years ago. I was a teenager. And
with Smother?
Since then. And I just remember being struck by how great his voice was, really.
Yeah.
At that time, you know, the bands that I had been in and the bands around me in our town, there wasn't really a voice that good. You know, there were some unique voices, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
But he had like a strength to it, like a Freddie Mercury kind of power to his voice, even at that time. He sounded like, I don't know, he sounded more like kind of...
But of his own,
you know,
sort of...
grungy metal with it, you know. And I said this to him when I spoke to him, you know, recently when I interviewed him. It was quite striking, I think, you know. And I didn't know, I expected very big things from then. And I think actually when you look at it in the round now, he's had a very cool career, actually.
So yeah.
It's fantastic to see that he's still, you know, doing what he loves. And
he's people just still reinvented himself.
Did get to see him in Hamburg, Reeper Barn, a couple of years ago when we were out there playing with Asylums, and they came to see us.
Oh, great.
And then we went and watched him, and he was doing this duo set.
No, yeah, that's what he's touring with now.
And he's using this great pickup, you know, which just kind of gets the kind of root movement of the chord sequence and turns it to a bass signal. And it is unbelievable, man. It really does sound like a powerhouse of three-piece, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maverick stuff, man. I mean... I don't know. It's not really very Asylums-y, though. We're still trying to get to grips with the DS1 and clone pedals. You know what I mean? equipment is not our forte.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say that. Like, Jazz is an equipment virtuoso, isn't he?
He is now.
Yeah. Decided to pick it up.
Quite,
and now
for quite some time, we were still helping each other out tune up. Do you know? I don't know. It's nice. I mean, in my humble opinion, I've always felt like I want to stay innocent with music in some respects. I've become very academic with it in some aspects of my life, you know, knowing about, you know, how music works and, you know, theory and, you know, production and all that. But when I'm trying to write, I always like to kind of maintain that child. Like, as soon as you hear something that's not quite right, it's a bit interesting. You know what I mean? So,
well, that's, go down. That's how I like to write songs, because I've passed, you know, the relevant theory grades to get my grade 8 in drums, but I don't remember any of it. But I just hear stuff and I'm like, that sounds all right. That'll do. Write a song.
That's it for me, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose it's basically, when you're doing comedy, you've got to stay playful and open, haven't you? You know,
definitely feel
like it's like that with songwriting. Like, I set myself
out, see what works,
a double album recently in the first lockdown, and it was really fun to go on that odyssey of just experimentation, really, because, you know, when you've got to knock out 12 songs, you know, you normally need about sort of 24 to cull the best 12 from. And
yeah,
I went for that. I've got my little thing on my wall over here. You can see it. I don't know. I've got like 160 bits of music.
Jesus.
On the wall. So I really went in, you know, like more than I ever have at any time in my life. I went right in, and it's all different shapes and sizes. And no matter what happens, if anything ever happens with it, some of it will never see the light of day. But it was a real joy to just, no edges on any of it. Just like some tunes were like Hammond organ and 808, you know, another tune is like acoustic tune, heavy stuff. Loved it. Really, really fun. It's like making the White album or something.
Nice, man. Oh, that's really cool. I've never sort of taken playing guitar that seriously. I really like it, but I'm a better drummer than I'm a guitarist. But you've gone light.
Yep, I'm just trying something here, mate.
Oh.
But is it better?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're like, just time-wise, we're sort of we're near the end, but sure. Yeah, no, it's good. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. What I want to do during this lockdown, because I'm going to try and set myself up on Fiverr as a session drummer.
Great.
Try and get a bit of income.
Leon from Smothers just made a record with musicians on Fiverr.
Has he? Oh, wicked.
He sent me some tracks, man. Honestly, like, there's like string sections on there, all sorts of great stuff. All
nice.
On Fiverr.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah, I got the theme tune for this podcast was made via Fiverr, actually by Mike Darrow.
Oh, wicked.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. I went for breakfast with him last year. Really enjoyed his company.
Yeah, lovely guy. What's this? Oh, yeah. So during this lockdown now, as I've sort of set the studio back up, I want to try and finally lay down some tracks that I wrote 20 years ago.
Write some new ones.
Yeah, yeah, sure. All right.
So much pressure to record something that's been in your head that long.
Yeah, but I feel like once I've got it out, I can finally start to write another song.
No, you're just obsessed about it.
Yeah. The good thing is, it's been in my head for so long that I'll just keep adding to it now.
It'll be like Chinese Democracy.
Yeah. It'll be the unfinished song that will never end.
First album's a box set.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you've got to get it on reel to reel, but it's a reel that goes around the world twice.
Like an intestine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. I am the guts of music. I would always say that. By which I mean sort of full of bile.
Indeed.
Yeah. Sure. That doesn't make sense.
I don't know what it means, but it sounded good.
Yeah. Right. Do you want to plug anything? Like, if you've got what are your social medias and stuff?
So my band is Asylums. We have three albums out. The first album came out in 2016 called Killer Brainwaves, which is available at Cool Thing Records Bandcamp. Pink vinyl, very tasty. It's got a brain and a microwave on the cover. Then we have the existential follow-up, Alien Human Emotions, where we kind of were mentally decomposing in real time. And that record is quite a sensitive look within. And then we recently, July, put out Genetic Cabaret, our third album, which was recorded by Steve Albini in Chicago. We went out there to record it. And pleased to say, as I said earlier, I think it's probably our best bit of work so far.
Yeah, it's incredible, man.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'm really proud of the songs and seems to capture a little bit of the moment of what's going on right now.
Yeah.
It's quite a political record. And so they're the three records that you can buy by me and my band. But we also have loads of other wicked stuff at the Cool Thing Records Bandcamp. We've been running our label for 6 years. And there's over 60 releases, singles and albums that you can delve into. Great
Amazing.
Artists like Suspects, Becky Margaret, Indian Queens, Private Jetlag, Blab, Becky, you know who's on my label. So just throwing that out there, check them out. They're all super talented and lovely people, inspirational people. And then I also do a radio show called Cool Thing Presents on Soho Radio fortnightly. So check it out. They're all online if you want to listen to stuff in the past. It's nothing more than an arts advocacy show, really, where we just talk to someone different from the arts each episode.
Yeah.
And sort of talk a little bit about their roots in and their practice, because we're nerds and we just love hearing how people make stuff.
Yeah. And also, just for the sake of sort of shouting stuff out whilst we are, the artwork for your first album, Killer Brainwaves, and I don't know about the other ones, but it was done by your dad, right?
Yeah, so we have like a kind of way. Sometimes my dad will come up with things just arbitrarily, just things that he's interested in. But when it normally, for Asylums, I normally sketch out a concept and he'll bring it to fruition. So he did that on the first record and styled it out better than I could have done in a million years. But I normally work backwards from a cover image when I'm writing an album.
Right.
So there's always something there that I'm trying to like make the music connect with. Second album, sketched it out with him again, but Kana Wiwaku shot that, and then my dad did a bit of post-production work on it. And then the third record, you know, back to plan A, really, I sketched out a concept and he brought it to fruition. And right to the last minute, the record was going to be a different colour, but then he went to the Clash London Calling exhibition and we decided to make it green.
Oh, nice.
I'm really glad we did, actually, because I'm looking at all three next to each other now on my wall, and they look quite balanced in terms of like a progression. So
yeah.
So what I'm doing now is I've just got like a collage on the other wall of everything we're trying to make the next record be like.
And, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm really into, so I think it goes back to being a music nerd. I love the archaeology of artistic development and tracing it all back to its origins. And I like it if it all feels very collectible.
I like doing the same thing. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's because you were saying earlier that like you think that this was your best record, but I think the way you could look at that is like all artists, like sort of every show that I've written has sort of developed and I've changed, but that's because I've changed as it's gone along. So like you've got older, you know, you've got a child now, and you know, Jazzy's married and all sorts, and so like everything that sort of changed along the way has changed with you. So maybe it's not necessarily that the music that you've just written, it is the best, but it resonates most with you at the minute.
I think actually, in a weird kind of way, this music has resonated with other people more than me.
Oh, really? And,
that's why I deem it to be successful in a way, because I was very nervous to put this record out. So I think I was nervous to put it out because it was intentionally a little bit less immediate than some of the previous music that we'd put out. Because I think to make a balanced album, you've got to, in a weird kind of way, not have standout tracks. They've all got to be consistently, in a way, compatible with one another. And I think because of the way that we recorded the first two albums, I love them. I like, there's not much in it. I mean, I think of it all as one body of work, really.
Yeah.
But I was so surprised that people found something to connect with in the most recent one, because I just didn't think anyone would be able to connect with it. I felt so detached when I was writing it. You know what I mean? So I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Maybe it's a bad thing because the world's sort of imploding slightly.
No, not at all.
So I don't know. It was more than I bargained for. And I felt like the universe wanted us to make it because we got a grant and a publishing deal. And,
yeah.
You know, honestly, man, I can't tell you how close it was to going pear shaped when we were trying to, you know, the Brexit thing was happening and the exchange rate between pounds and dollars was going haywire.
Yeah.
You know, recording to tape with jet lag, you know. You name it, it should have come out badly because of the sheer pressure on it. We were there for 9 days and it just didn't. It just worked. And I just felt like the universe had our backs on that one. So
yeah, it's a great album, man.
Oh, thanks, man. I mean, you know, I'm glad people like it and I'm just proud of it. But I'm proud of everything that we've done so far.
Yeah.
It's always such a long shot to even get a record out, let alone three.
So. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wanted to say, I did start winding this up, but I've got back into it now. What's the title of the track? The Miracle Age, is it?
Oh yeah, The Miracle Age. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the only track that I was really umming and ahhing about whether to include it or not, because it is just so sensitive. Do you know what I mean? Very not violent.
It reminded me of Oratorio, the 100 Reasons track.
I don't know that song.
It's on the first album, Ideas Above Our Station, which is like, it's got a real similar vibe. It's sort of, it's like, it's slow and it builds and then jumps into this sort of like heavier bit near the end, and like, it's great.
That sounds cool. I really enjoyed recording The Miracle Age because for a while Henry didn't want to drum on that one. He felt that it would restrict the emotion of it, you know? And then we kind of found this happy medium of like almost percussive playing for the front end of it and then really locking into some groove stuff later on. And as we were doing it, right, this is the first day of tracking, we'd recorded three or four tunes that day, in the first day, all to tape, all with jet lag and a hangover, I might add. But we were well rehearsed and they were going down quick, and Mike was falling apart by that point in the session, and he couldn't even tell what notes were coming out of his bass. That's how tired he was. And I just said to the boys, like, should we just go for one take? And we did it, and everyone was just doing it on muscle memory. And then we went up to the control and we were like, bloody hell, it sounds great. But we genuinely were asleep while we were doing it, more or less. We didn't make any eye contact. And we were just in this weird tripping out, like just I've never been, I never experienced jet lag whilst working, you see. So,
yeah.
And working in the studio with one of your heroes in this massive studio, financial pressure on it.
Yeah, you don't want to mess it up.
Exactly, man. And it was certainly a thing. And then as we finished, we've been up to control, we heard it. Mike crawled up to Steve Albini on his hands and knees and went, "I've got to stop now." And he just went to bed. I didn't see him for like 12 hours.
Amazing.
It was a surreal moment, I have to admit.
Yeah.
Pleading, "I need to sleep,"
yeah,
to a legend of its magnitude.
Oh, incredible.
Steve was just like, "Great." I can go home.
Nice. Yeah, like we discussed earlier, which I've sort of briefly mentioned what it's going to be. I want to get you back on. Like, I'll get you, sort of you and Jazz, like, play a stripped down set and then get you both chatting. Although I imagine Jazz will largely sit quietly, politely. But
by stripped down, I hope you mean
naked.
Yeah, musically, not naked, because that would be annoying.
Oh, no, I've got no interest in that, no. Yeah, just
you like Two Virgins by John and Yoko.
Oh, dear. No, yeah, strip down music, please. Yeah, well, I want to get you guys back, and then we'll do that whole sort of evening. So you'll play a show, I'll do some stand up, and then we'll record a live podcast.
Sounds fun to me, man.
Yeah, let's. Well, when the world isn't melting, let's book that in.
When the world isn't melting, we shall play again.
Is that a song? Have you just written that?
I just made that up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Write it down. Classic.
I will. Yeah. I'll write it down in my head. That's a bad idea.
Yeah. Cool. Right. I've got to go to sleep.
Yes. Yes, I've got to go to sleep.
It's 9:30.
I need to go to sleep.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Cool. Lovely to speak to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on, man. It's been really nice. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, let's do it. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to doing it again. I'm looking forward to seeing you in person again, because obviously, seeing you today was the first time I saw you since I dropped some cookies off on your doorstep 7 months ago.
A lovely, spontaneous, unpredictable thing to do, which only someone that would put £20 behind the bar at a stag do could think of.
I assure you. Well, the bacon was completely done, I think, by my fiance. She's very good at that sort of thing. If I'd cooked them...
Your contribution to the cakes was driving.
Yeah. Well, because she doesn't know where anyone lives, so because she's not from around here. Yeah, she did all the baking, which is good, because if I'd baked them, you wouldn't have said thank you.
Oh, well, have you tasted my cooking?
No, I haven't actually. Have I? I probably have. I must have.
I don't know. I don't know if I've ever cooked. I just eat cereal.
Yeah.
I've had some chocolate shredders for dinner.
I'm sure I've had some cereal from you before. So, yeah, you've done it well. I've just realised that I never did the introduction to the podcast.
Should we do the introduction at the end?
Yeah, I'm gonna do the introduction to end it, I think.
Hey guys, this is the end of the show at the beginning. My name is...
Right, I'm gonna do it properly though. Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Comedian's Tea Party with Side Eves, with me, Side Eves. And today my guest is Luke Branch, and this is the end of the episode. Thank you, goodbye.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for coming on, man. It's been really fun.
You're welcome, man. Anytime.
Also, I've just had a text from and she said Biden is ahead by 40, only needs 17 to win.
It's going
to
happen, isn't it?
Fingers crossed. That'd be nice. Yeah.
I'll catch you later, bruv.
Yeah. Take it easy, man. See you soon.
Bye, man.
Thanks. Bye.
So that was Luke Branch. What an amazing guy. I love him. He's a very, very, very dear friend of mine. And I also love his music, so... Go and check it out. Well, that is one of the main things that I'm going to say. Go and check out the Asylum's Bandcamp page. I'll put a link to that on the podcast description, but you can find Asylum's. It's spelled like Asylum's. It's on Bandcamp. So go check out Bandcamp. It's brilliant. It's a lot of really good comedians on there, on Bandcamp as well, and like hundreds of bands. It's pretty much the only place you can buy some of those sort of band music. So yeah, go and check that out. Well, just by the physical media, I just got the vinyl record from him, and very, very good, very cool, luminescent vinyls. So one thing that he forgot to say, I did ask, he didn't give me the social details, but they're on Instagram as Asylums UK, and they're on Twitter as Asylums Band, and they've got a page on Facebook, which just search Asylum's band, I guess you'll find it. And as ever, I'd absolutely love it if you could go and give me 5-star ratings on iTunes, because it helps us get found. Leave us some positive reviews. I'd absolutely love that. I love reading your reviews. I've also started putting these on YouTube, so you can go and check out. It's just youtube.com/Sideeves, and there's a playlist on there for the Comedian's Tea Party. You can just search Comedian's Tea Party with Sideeves, and there's a playlist on there of all the episodes, should that be a way that you want to listen to podcasts. And as of today, I'm recording with Matthew Crosby tomorrow, which I'm very excited about. So look forward to that one. That will come out in about a week or so, hopefully. And other than that, yeah, just like and subscribe. Tell your friends. Be good. Drink tea. Be kind to each other. I've woken my fiancé up. I've got to go. I love you. Bye.